The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order state and local government operations, reforms, and technology. First bill on the agenda is House File 2227, Representative Marquardt. Members, all of these bills are going to rules. Rules will then send them to the next stop. So, Representative Marquardt, your motion will be to send the bill to rules. Representative Marquardt.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And to kick things off this morning, I would like to move the DE2 amendment, Mr. Chair, if I may.
All right.
And also with that, Mr. Chair, I do have an A3 amendment I would like to add, which I will move that.
The all right. A3 well, first amendment. Of all, you're doing the initial amendment to put the bill in order?
That's correct.
All right. So why don't we take action on that? We do have a quorum. So, Representative Marquardt.
Make the motion?
Well, let's get the bill in order.
Okay.
And then we'll move once we get the bill in order.
Thank you very much. Well, I will move the DE2 amendment.
All right. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
And Mr.
Amendment
Chair,
is adopted.
I would like to move the A3 amendment.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So the bill is in order. Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I first of all want to thank you for giving me this hearing and also thank the members for allowing me to have this meeting. This bill that you're going to hear came out of part of what we've done out of the redesign group. And I do want to recognize the other co-chairs in that group. Representative Dean Erdahl, Carol McFarland, and Diane Loeffler. And also, what this bill represents is really four other bills that we've taken the strongest, what I believe the strongest areas out of each of these four innovation and redesign bills, and even made them better and put them into this one bill. And I want to recognize those authors, Representative Hilty, Representative Downey, Representative Thiessen, and Representative Mariani. So the work here is also their work. So I want to really extend my appreciation to them. Members, what I'd like to do is talk generally about what this bill does. Then I'd like to go over the bill and then answer any questions and so forth after that, if I might do that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt, proceed.
Very good. Members, I'm convinced that this bill will be, and the council that is created by this bill, will be a key player in keeping Minnesota a great state as we face our budget challenges into the future. You know, right now, you're looking at next year a budget deficit of $5 to $7 billion. And our chief economist in our state and our chief demographer in our state, Mr. Gillespie and Mr. Stenson, talk about the new normal. And the new normal is that our economic growth is going to be slower, our revenue base is going to be weaker as baby boomers move into retirement years from working. There's going to be less consumption, more spending. We've got health care and education that is going to put pressures on other parts of the budget. You've got state and local governments are going to be in chronic budget deficits. So we're operating in a new normal. But what we tend to do in this state, and we're looking at that again this year, is we usually drag out the two suspects. And that is either raise taxes or cut spending. And into the future, neither one of those options are going to keep Minnesota great. And so what this does and what we have here is we need to look at growing the economy on the revenue side, creating jobs, but we can only go so far doing that. And on the other side of the ledger, we have to look at redesign, how we get more value to the taxpayer, how we can get better service, better results at a better price. How can we redesign systems to save costs? And so what we need is a body, a group that can focus like a laser beam on these type of efforts. A group that can operate free of politics and free of having to really work on that budget next time around when we face a $5 to $7 billion deficit. And I believe this Minnesota Innovation and Research Council is that body that can put its entire heart and soul into looking at how we can put the taxpayer first at every instance, how we can increase reform to the taxpayer, accountability, value, and efficiency to the taxpayer. So that's what this group does. And, you know, this year, our redesign group, we had a website. And we had over 500 people respond to our website on how to redesign government. And the residents and our citizens, they understand it. And I'd like to read a few quotes that I took from what we had on the website. And here is one resident, and I've got copies of these later, members, if you want to see these. But here's what we received from one resident. An example of fiefdom lunacy came during a snowstorm when I saw a county plow in the driveway of Cordiac Park, a school district truck plowing the parking lot at the high school, and a city rig handling the driveway at the city park 500 yards away. Here's another one. Minnesota has 87 counties with 87 individual governments, 87 sheriffs, 87 county boards, commissions, and it's such overkill. We have so many counties and entities fighting for their own piece of a declining pie, there's nothing left. Let me give you one more from a resident. We need more accountability and faster results. The current structure is slow and outdated. The residents out there get it. We need to redesign our systems. And not only do we need to do that, but this is the way in which we not only increase value to residents, but we can save costs. So remember, what this group does, it puts the taxpayer first at every instance. That's the key. And let me just generally go over the things that this group would do, because I know one of the concerns of this body is always, why do we need to create another council? I feel that this council is absolutely necessary if we're going to address our future budget challenges into the future. We're going to maintain our state's greatness. What this council will do is, right out of the gate by January 15th, would be required to come up with a strategic plan that would look at how to get the public involved, but also look at ways in which we can save on technology, and also look at total state and local government structural redesign. How can we get those savings? It would provide grants to help incentivize local units of governments to innovate and to go out there, give them that nudge, and to do some pilot projects that could be shared around the state. How can you create an incentive for innovation? Another thing it would do is, and a key function that it would do, is to eliminate burdensome bureaucracy, to streamline government, to allow the cities, counties, and the state more flexibility, and also to eliminate obstacles that keep them from providing top-notch services to its citizens at a good cost. It would serve as a clearinghouse for some of these very best of plans. Would look at best practices. Another crucial part that it would do, it would provide for kind of a council of policy, where it would commission studies to make sure that in whatever field we have, education or healthcare, local government service delivery, that we are actually spending our dollars on things that work, that we're spending our dollars on things that get results to the taxpayer. It would be kind of a consumer reports, if you will. And finally, a big area on this is a guarantee. One of the last sections of the bill guarantees that for the dollars that this council would spend, it's going to guarantee savings to the taxpayer, and also to promote and give recommendations to the governor and the legislature on how we can redesign systems. So that, in short, is what this does. I know there's a lot to it, but I would like to quickly go over the bill. And, Mr. Chair, if I could go over the bill and take questions later, because some are related and some may be.
We're working off the delete everything amendment, just so members know, and then the other amendment that Representative Marquardt had added. So can we focus our questions on the bill as amended? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Article 1 is that strategic plan that I talked about. By January 15th. The council would come back to the legislature with recommendations, would look at system redesign and reform, would look at how you can get the public more involved in coming up with more value for the taxpayer. Article 2 deals with the Minnesota Innovation Research Council. Section 2 deals with definitions. Section 3 is membership. And I think the one thing to mention about membership on the bottom of page 2 is that clauses 3 through 7, those five people are the only five that would vote on the waivers and the rules. No one else would vote on the waivers and the rules. And this is because of kind of the accountability factor. So the other citizen members would not vote on waivers and rules. They would vote on the grants. Legislators do not vote at all. And the reason for that is in the Constitution, it says there's question of whether or not they can hold another position, so they cannot vote there. If you go to page number 3, it talks about subdivision 2, duties of the council. It waives administrative rules and enforcement of procedural laws, grants for redesign innovations, sharing of services. Page 4 does a lot of work on looking at unnecessary mandates, which isn't the only effort going on in doing that, but it would focus on that. If you go to the bottom of page 4, subdivision 3, that's where it provides a clearinghouse for ideas that can be sent across the state. If it works in one city or in one department, can be sent across the state. It would be, in effect, an innovation and efficiency hub. If you move to page number 5, this is where we get into the rule and law waiver requests. What you're looking at is a waiver from administrative rules or from the enforcement of procedural laws. And procedural laws are laws that tell you how to do something, not what has to be done. And I'll give you an example here later. Page number 6 goes through the application process and making sure that there are specific outcomes that this group would look at to get this waiver. What type of an outcome would there be? And they would look at to make sure we get more value to the taxpayer. It would make sure that it's reducing burdensome bureaucracy. It would be streamlining government. Page number 7 talks about how the process would work. If a application comes in, the council then would have 15 days to give that waiver to any department or agency that would be impacted by that waiver. That agency then has 60 days to get back to the council, and at that point, the council has to decide whether or not to grant the waiver or not. If they do grant the waiver, page number 8, we're looking at subdivision 5, conditions of agreement. If they do grant the waiver, they make sure that there are outcomes that must be met as part of the agreement, so that there's increased value to the taxpayer, and it looks also at a way of measuring. Now, an administrative rule, the duration for waiver from an administrative rule would be 2 to 4 years, and the waiver from enforcement of a procedural law can go no longer than 10 days after the next session, with the idea being that if the legislature thinks that the waiver of this procedural enforcement of this procedural law is a good thing, they can enact it in the next session. If not, then it ends 10 days after the next session. Moving to the bottom of page 8, waiver of state rules, same type of process. Those, we make sure that, of course, nothing can violate collective bargaining agreements or other types of laws or reduce a service to people that are currently getting a service. There's all sorts of safeguards in all of that. Page 10, again, outcomes must be part of any waiver. What are we getting as far as increased value to the taxpayer before we would waive that? The idea with these waivers is that if you have a system and you want to produce a result, the state should not be standing in the way of doing that. Let me give you two quick examples of some waivers, just to give you an example. One situation involved Red Rock Central Schools. And what they wanted to do is they had, I think, 3 or 4 sites. They had independent districts in Lamberton, Sanborn, and Storton Jeffers. And what they wanted to do is close the K through 6 Sanborn facility. But state law said that if you had a consolidation, that at least every school had to keep at least 3 grades open. I suppose the idea was so that every community had a school. But in this case, everyone had agreed they wanted to close the Sanborn Elementary School, but was in violation of keeping 3 grades open in any site. And so this is a waiver that allowed them to do that. Another case dealt with county services to children who are mentally ill. At that time, Minnesota statute required county caseworkers to complete a community support plan every 90 days. But county workers said that really in 90 days there wasn't much of an improvement for these patients over this time. Plus, there was all of this extra burdensome paperwork. So they came in, as did 4 other counties, to say, why don't we move this from 90 days to 180 days? It's going to be a lot more practical. It's going to be a lot more efficient, save some costs on paperwork. That's what they did, and that was later made into law. So one thing with these waivers is you can basically do a pilot program, see if it works. And if it does work, the legislature can take a look at that and then put it into law. Let's look at the grants. Page 10, Section 6. These would be grants to spur innovation and sharing among local units of government or other entities. It has to focus on value, expanding consumer choice, and so forth. Now, back in 1993 to 2002, the Board of Innovation existed. And much of this is the Board of Innovation, but it's expanded quite a bit, I think makes it a lot stronger. But from 1993 to 1999, to give you an example on these grants, there was 510 applications for these grants in that 6-year period, and the council granted 80 of those. And of those 80, it cost about $4.6 million, but they were able to get almost $15 million in savings. And what they ultimately got was about $7 million of annual ongoing savings. And their budget at that time was about $1 million. So they were getting about $7 in savings for $1 of cost. This is set up to do even much better than that. If you look at the bottom of page 11, starts a scoring system on how they would grade that. Section 8 on page 12 is a repayment of grant. So let's say a city receives a grant, saves $100,000, and received $50,000 as a way to get going. The council could require that payment of that $50,000 back. So you can actually get some of those and put those back into use again. Section 9 is a new concept modeled very much after the Washington Policy Institute, that when we had that day at the Humphrey Institute and they had several speakers come in, someone from Washington State came in. And that is where the council would pick a topic and say, whatever that might be, how can we get the best value for the dollar? How can we do some research base to make sure what we're spending money on is actually getting the job done? You could look at an array of options, for example, closing the achievement gap. And it would be a consumer report on saying, this is what really is the best way in which you're going to get the best result for the dollar. And so this is something that would be new and I think would bring back huge, huge efficiencies and savings and reform into the future. Let's move to section number 11. This is the guarantee. This is the guarantee. This is going to say that the council is going to come back with annual reports on where the state can save, where they can get more efficiencies, more value for the taxpayer. It also says that it will provide $3 in savings for every dollar spent. It further goes on to say that it will recommend at least $20 in savings for every dollar spent. So this bill in Section 11 is telling the taxpayers of this state that if you allow this council to exist, and if you invest in this council, we are going to provide back many times over savings, efficiencies, reform, and increased value to the taxpayer for that dollar spent. The final section that is of importance is the $350,000 appropriation, which is contingent upon a one-on-one match with outside sources. So, Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate your indulgence as I went over, but that is the bill.
Representative Marquardt, I was going to use your bill as an example of why we're here today. You said at the beginning that your Board of Innovation is in response to our inability to raise revenue. The governor will not sign a tax increase. The last 24 hours has been an example of our inability to cut, and I would say that the third problem that we have is our own inability to enforce any discipline on this body, and this hearing is an example of it. We're weeks past bill deadline. All three of these bills are here because we're told we have to have a hearing. The deadlines were not enforced. This committee worked for the better part of a year to try to say that this process was flawed, and this hearing is an example of the flaw. So when we can't raise revenue, when we can't cut, we create more government. I don't have an argument with anything that you do in the bill, but I would propose that everything that you want to do in this bill could be done by the 30-some committees of this House, by the governments that exist at every level that we have in Minnesota now, or by simply our focus on disciplining ourselves. If we can't hold ourselves to simple deadlines, a Board of Innovation isn't going to change this process. We have two other bills here today. The second bill is probably the most egregious example, and as the lobbyists fill this chamber, of our inability to hold to any type of discipline or deadline here. So with that, further discussion to the bill. And by the way, members, all of these bills are going to rules. Rules will then deal with them. This has a fiscal note, so it will have to go to finance at some point. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, I'm going to thank you for this proposal. I'm going to thank you for this work. I know I sent out a survey to my constituents, and one of the things that I heard back loudly and clearly is, please look at redesigning, reforming, innovating government. I think that you've put together a bipartisan package here. I thank Representative Lanning for his work with you on this effort. We're at a time now where economic necessity, efficiency, a changing environment, perhaps even a changing understanding of what the role of government is, all require that this type of work be done. So I'm grateful to you, to Representative Lanning and the others who put together this bill, and I appreciate you bringing it forward.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
You know, I really would not have brought this forward if I thought a committee could do this. This is going to take very focused work. The entire heart and soul of this effort needs to be directed. And where a committee, I just don't see a committee doing this. And Mr. Chair, maybe they should. But I think it is vitally important that this group be free of the politics that occur as best as possible, and also be free of having to worry about the daily grind of putting together the budget next year. That just is going to be too time consuming. This can focus on redesign, can focus on the research, it can focus on what needs to be done to get there, and I don't see any other group being able to do that.
Representative Marquardt, I beg to differ. I think creating another level of government to try to rein in government is the problem that we have here, but that's simply my observation. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, I just had a couple of questions about some of the pieces of the bill here. And on page 2, where you talk about the legislative auditor making recommendations, could you just describe that a little bit? I'm concerned that the legislative auditor certainly has, I would think, enough things to do, and I'm just wondering what additional duties you're requesting.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. What I'm looking at there, the legislative auditor could say, let's look at some redesign function. I mean, maybe there's some cities doing some redesign, and they could recommend further study on that. Or they could say, for example, we know that you commission studies to look at how to close the achievement gap, for example. We recommend that you see, this was one that was granted a few years ago, could you see if this is working, or would you research that area? I just I think it's just to try to get the legislative auditor into the process, which I think just adds another component of accountability and strength to the bill. So I think it could be almost anything. I don't have anything in particular that might be an example.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just further on down, talking about the membership of the council, this seems like it's such a large topic. It's not a single issue topic. Certainly there are many things, and so I'm just wondering, as far as trying to get people to do this in the next 7 months, if I'm understanding correctly, you're saying by January 15th, so it wouldn't be, it would be in the next year and a half? Let's see. No, in the next 7 months,
yep,
right?
That's correct.
Okay, so these people are going to try to be focused, try to do this. Have you talked to people in these areas? It just seems as though it's so many things to try to accomplish that you're setting it up for, you know, failure, because it's just an impossible task to try to rein in.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppe, great question. I haven't talked to everyone, and certainly the membership there of the citizens would have to be appointed. But I do know groups are ready to go. Through our redesign caucus that we've held, groups are ready to go. They want to be part. They have ideas. They realize the redesign, and it's coming from the Chamber of Commerce to foundations to all over. They want this redesign to occur, and so I don't think that's going to be a problem as far as people coming to the forefront. And this has been, we've had a lot of people talking about redesign for years. I mean, going back 20 to 30 years. And the problem is that we have all of these great publications and all of these great ideas that come forward, and they're never put into action, or never anyone tries to implement something. This group here can do that, could put plans and ideas actually into action to see if they work. And one of the strengths of this council would be if a city or some group did a pilot project, is to look and see how did that work, and can we now translate this to the entire state of Minnesota. So I mean, I think it has great potential, and I think people are ready to go. And I don't think January 15th would be, I'm not saying it would be easy, but I think it would be very doable.
Representative Poppe.
One more question, please. Certainly, I have some thoughts about some redesign in a particular area, and that would be within higher education. Within MNSCU, the University of Minnesota, I think seamless transfer, talking about K-12 and going on to post-secondary education, and how we spend tax dollars more than once when we're trying to educate our kids. So I value the concept of trying to figure this out. I'm just wondering about the reality of how this is going to actually make a difference and be able to do that. So, again, just a further comment about that.
Representative Mark.
Do you have any?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Poppe, this is what it's all about. You've got an entity here that could focus just on this. And I get back to the larger picture again, and what Representative Morrow said is we can't go along this same path. We just can't. It's not sustainable. And so, but yet we want to make sure that we have high quality schools, that we have good public safety, top notch health care for folks at a good cost. And it's these efforts are the only way to do it, and it's the only way we're going to be able to, on the expenditure side, look at gaining the most efficiency. So I don't know if your question was more direct than that. I
think my question, Mr. Chair, is just it's tough to tell people that they need to do things differently and for them to accept that. And I found that myself in trying to do some innovation with MNSCU. And so I'm concerned about, there might be time and effort and money put into something, and when the entity itself says, we know what we're doing and we're going to do it our own way, how do you go beyond that impasse?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, Representative Poppe, thank you. I understand now your question. Well, that comes to us. It really does. I mean, when this group comes back with recommendations to us, and some of the grants don't go through. I mean, they just would go to these communities to try things out and then come back. But so many times we've received good recommendations, but we've been too afraid to move because one interest group here or one there. And so it's going to be very incumbent, if we're going to do this, for us as members to have courage to move forward. I mean, we have to be able to move beyond the comfort zone, because the status quo isn't the status quo by accident. It's because certain people are benefiting or very comfortable with the system. And so the only way to move that in a new direction, and it might be the, trying to move the Titanic quickly and steer it out of harm's way, but it's going to take members to have the courage to really step forward and say, this is what's best for the state and our taxpayers, and you've got to come along and help us do it for our interest groups.
All right, members, I'm told that there's another committee coming in at 10, and I have five more people to question. Representative Kahn.
Just a comment. At this point, first of all, we did have something like this in place once that was run by Jim Gelbman, who's now in the Secretary of State's office. Did you consult with him while you were putting this together?
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn. I have, yes. In fact, last week before our hearing, I met with him again for about a half hour, and he's provided me all sorts of great information that I didn't copy.
Okay.
But if any members want to see what this board did prior, in fact, it was a semi-finalist for Harvard or some government award, his efforts. He did a tremendous job. But again, Representative Kahn, the savings were 7-1. At one time, and I'm not looking at this, the annual budget was $1 million. And they had identified over $7 million of ongoing savings. And that was besides all the pilot projects and waivers that led to greater efficiencies and less cost and more value to taxpayers.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Just again to show the danger of this sort of stuff, that did not survive a change of control in the administration and in the legislature, that activity, with all of the good results that it had. Just one last comment. I'm a little nervous, and maybe as this goes on, you can put some language in the reporting. One of the things that makes me a little nervous about streamlining is all you have to think about is all the ways that British Petroleum streamlined their drilling process and streamlined their ability to get as much oil as they could out as quickly as possible. So I'm a little concerned about when you do all these waivers to get all of the things that might stand in the way of something that might need a better job done for it. And that's just a comment. You can answer it if you want.
Well, Representative Marquardt, you may want to avoid the lean manufacturing concept that Toyota used, too. Representative Simon.
Representative Marquardt, thanks a lot for your work on this. I think at the heart of what you're doing, it seems to me, is the realization that really what people care about is taxpayer value. It's not so much is government too big or too small, that whole size issue. We get in endless obsessive debates about that around here. I really don't think that's it most of the time. And they just care that their money is being spent wisely and well. And this is one way to do that. I do think, too, that I'm skeptical about the ability of the legislature, at least alone, to do that kind of thing. I mean, we are a part-time citizen legislature, and our committees are basically bill factories.
Right.
That's what they are. We're here 3.5 to 4.5 months a year. Very few committees, this one is an exception, but very few do oversight or hearings in the interim to discuss or tackle various reform issues. Mostly they just hear bills. That's it. And that's because we are a citizen legislature. So there really, at least in this body, is not the time. It's not built for the kind of thing that you're talking about. So I'm not really convinced that it is a job for the legislature, at least not alone with a lot of other partners. So thank you for doing this, and I think it could be a big success.
Representative Simon, to your point, this committee has now 464 bills in its possession. It has the largest number of bills of any committee in the Minnesota House, and we are not going to hear 464 bills. We are past deadline, but I think it's also our responsibility to say no at certain times, that things shouldn't be done. Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, I won't take a lot of time about this. I too want to thank Representative Marquardt you know, we're looking for innovation and reforms in the way we do government for all the reasons that Representative Simon just pointed out. I don't question the goal. I question the means. I served on the Government Reform and Efficiency Task Force in the city of St. Cloud for a number of years, and the work of that committee was taken outside of government completely. You mentioned that you weren't going to, this wouldn't be politicized, yet we've got AFSCME at the table, legislators at the table. We don't have the counties or cities at the table, I might add, in the membership. The goal of that committee was to take the decision-making or the discussion or the innovation completely outside of government, get private sector people sitting around the table, perhaps one staffer from city government, and they did it without any funding. They did it voluntarily, and they surfaced ideas, and some of them became the law of the land, and some of them didn't. But I think there are many things we can do to surface innovation and reforms. There's a lot of it happening already in cities without creating another council. I notice this has $350,000 appropriation. I don't know if there's a fiscal note or not on it. But I think there's a lot of that that's happening already in Minnesota that we could encourage through legislation. You know, if we have a good idea, we can bring forward a bill. If we want to provide a grant or some matching funds to help them, that can all be dealt with in legislation. So I applaud the goal, but I question the means.
Representative Marquardt, you want to respond?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Godwell, that's absolutely right. I mean, a lot of ideas and efforts have come from outside. I just am so thoroughly convinced in facing the challenges that we are facing into the future with our budget that this is absolutely necessary. Is it the cure-all? No. But I really believe we're going to be able to tackle things much more efficiently and providing greater value to the taxpayer if we have this concerted effort. You know, we already have a lot of groups working on a lot of redesign efforts. But there really isn't this clearinghouse, or I should say this hub, that has brought all of those together, kind of this office of new ideas. And I'm just so thoroughly convinced, and I know the chair, you know, this is late. And as we were going through this, the realization is that if we go into next year without something like this, we're not going to change course. We need something, as Representative Simon said, that a committee has too much going on, too many bills, you're going to deal. You need something that can focus on redesign and value like a laser beam. And so that's why I think this is so crucial. One reason the counties and the cities are not on this, and that was something we purposely did, is because so much of the waivers and so many of the grants all go to cities and counties and local governments, and we thought with conflict of interest, and so those were kept off on purpose. And, of course, they're going to be big players in all of this, but thank you for your
time. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Marquardt, I am intrigued with page 10, line 22, your discussion of shared services, particularly in light of the next bill we're going to be hearing in this committee. Representative Marquardt, I do have a question or a query on page 14, line 13. The title of the section is Guaranteeing Increased Value to the Taxpayer. Yet as I look through there, I don't see any repercussions if that is not met. So I'm wondering if your title shouldn't be changed to Wistfully Hoping for Increased Value to the Taxpayer.
Representative Biskins, is that a suggestion or an amendment? Obviously a suggestion. Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, you're right. There isn't. I still think that part could be a work in progress, Representative Biskins. I am really working for bipartisan support on this, and that's why a couple weeks ago I gave everyone the plan and talked to some of the members and so forth. And if you think that needs to be stronger, I'm very agreeable to that. We put some things in here right now that we thought would lead to a lot of accountability that a lot of groups don't have, at least saying you're going to give reports and you're going to say this much in savings and so forth. But I'm open to ideas that would even strengthen that and make it more of a guarantee. I agree with you, Representative Biskins.
Further discussion? Representative Marquardt, did you have anyone that is going to testify?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Marquardt, to your motion.
Well, members, thank you so much for hearing this. I know it's late, but the same token, I believe so strongly that without this council or something like it, that we are going to be flailing next year as we deal with future plans on dealing with a declining revenue base and increasing expenditure pressures, healthcare and education and others. And we need a group, again, that can focus and put their entire heart and soul in putting the taxpayer first at every instance in the areas of increased value, efficiency, and accountability. And so that's what this bill does. And members, I ask for your support.
Right. Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 2227, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 3825. Representative Solberg. Members, there's a new engrossment of the bill that was just passed out. So would you please refer to the new summary and engrossment rather than the one that was in the packet that was just came down from House Research today. Representative Solberg, I'm going to move that House File 3825 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. Representative Solberg, we are working on the bill. We all value the Vikings, but we're under a very tight timeline. So to the bill, it was amended last night in the local government division. Oh, I'm sorry. We have a division report. I apologize, Representative Solberg. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the division report.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Representative Nelson, you want to make the motion then on the bill?
I move that the bill be passed and be referred to the Rules Committee.
All right. Representative Solberg, to the bill, as amended.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. And we'll be very, very short in the description. This is just an opportunity, I think, with the bill as it stands right now, and being very respectful of the administration's concerns about any funding mechanism that does not involve a local partner. This bill, as it's before your committee right now, would allow the city of Minneapolis and or any other city that would have an opportunity and wants to participate to step up to the plate and negotiate a stadium, multi-use stadium, with the Vikings being the major tenant. That in and of itself is pretty much probably the reason for it being in the committee. I appreciate very much the opportunity to bring this forward for you. Just a little bit about what's in the bill right now. As it is envisioned, one of the opportunities that for the city of Minneapolis is in 10 years, the bond payment, not all the money that goes to the convention center, but just the bond payment for the convention center will be paid off, and that's about $28.7 million. This would give the city the opportunity to negotiate and using some of those proceeds in 10 years from now, when that no longer is needed, for just paying off the bonds for the convention center, to divert those or continue to collect them, but pay for the bonds for this multi-use stadium. The city of Minneapolis, as I understand, has some, you know, but fiscal concerns, and I appreciate that a great deal. Collection that goes into that particular fund also has to be deal with things such as promoting the convention center. We all value that because it is very much a city-run asset, but the state benefits greatly by that activity. And we also have to be sensitive to the opportunity and pressures that they have to be able to have some funds for rehab and update. This would just give them, as it stands right now, an opportunity to be able to come up to the plate with this proposal and negotiate. It doesn't say that they have to do this. It just gives an option for them to be able to solve this problem. And with that, Mr. Chair, I know there are all kinds of witnesses that would like to testify. I've asked all of them to be that want to come in to be very concise, if we could, and respectful of your time. And additionally, I would ask that they also try to focus on the purpose of the
Representative Solberg, we are going to focus on the bill before us. We have a number of amendments that have already been proposed. So I would like to have a representative of the Vikings, either Mr. Bagley or Mr. Poppin, testify first. Either one of them here. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Lester Bagley, Vice President of Public Affairs for the Vikings. A couple brief comments, if I could, up front, and then be happy to answer questions. But to your
well, Mr. Bagley, I appreciate the comments. We're running at a tight deadline here to the bill, and you can focus on that if you would. And I do have a couple of amendments. So,
okay. Just real quick again, Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity. We know you have priorities. We know there's valuable committee time focused on this, so we're grateful to take time to talk about this issue.
Mr. Bagley, as I said, there were 464 bills in the possession of this committee. This bill number is 3825, literally introduced within the last couple of days. This hearing is not at my request. It's at the request of leadership. So, to the bill.
I understand, Mr. Chair. Thank you. To the bill, and a couple of background points where we are in terms of our lease. We are down to the last 2 years, 20 games left at the Metrodome. The two issues with the current facility are, number one, the revenue generation. We're at the bottom of the NFL in revenues, and number two, the fan experience. While the Metrodome has been great to the community, there have been 77 million people through there. It no longer works for fans or for modern sports economics. There also is pressure mounting on the Vikings from other NFL owners as well as other NFL markets. There's been a great effort, and this has been a long time coming to get to the table. Again, we have not had a serious conversation since 2006 at the Capitol on this issue. A great bipartisan leadership group at the legislature, as well as a coalition effort, including business leaders, labor leaders, hospitality industry, and our fans. Two quick points on that I wanted to make on to the bill regarding the cost and owner contribution. One is that the cost of $791 million that are identified in the bill, that our view and our recommendation is that the owner contribution be calculated on the NFL program, which is an open-air stadium. We're not arguing that a facility should not have a roof. We're trying to point out that the benefits of a roof on the facility accrue to the state and community, and not to the Vikings. So I think it's worth a discussion about how to calculate the owner contribution. Again, our view would be that the one-third of the open-air NFL program should be that basis. The other quick point is on the which is in the bill, is the bond requirements and the requirements that the Vikings would accept the terms of a 40-year lease. And we have on two points have made compromise and said we would consider. One is the fixed roof as opposed to retractable roof to bring the cost down with the fixed roof, and also to spread the payments over 40 years and at the same time locking the Vikings in until 2050. We would again have said that we would consider that under the right circumstances and under the right conditions in the lease. That is not in the bill. We believe that needs some attention going forward. Are there others in the room that can address the multi-purpose nature of the facility? But clearly, the Metrodome has been that. We would recommend that the Stadium Authority consider hiring a for-profit operator, someone that's motivated to go out and recruit events to maximize the use of the facility. Obviously, to generate revenues in the facility, but also to increase economic activity surrounding the facility. couple of points. One is the taxes the Vikings pay, the but-for taxes, but-for the Vikings in Minnesota. There's $18 million in taxes that would not be here. Those taxes go to pay health care, roads, bridges, et cetera. The Sports Commission can testify on behalf regarding the study that they've done that shows that the new facility and the team will generate $26 million a year. Let them speak to that. The other report the Sports Commission did was that a tax study that showed that the Metrodome was built for $55 million and that with $33 million in public money. The state of Minnesota contributed zero. Of that, $304 million returned to the state in tax dollars, with the Vikings responsible for $160 million. The folks are here to can address the jobs issue, 7,500 construction jobs. Just the last couple points on quality of life impacts. We averaged the Vikings average this season a 69 share, which means that 69% of our people in Minnesota are watching with the TVs on. We're watching Viking games. That's about 2 million people. When you add our radio audience of 400,000 to 500,000, and the audience in the facility, you get 2.5 million people. So nearly half of the people in the state. There's no other entity or entertainment option that captures the state's attention as that. Vikings have been strong community partners, and all of our players participate in community programs. Happy to answer any questions on that. Looking at the last thing on the analysis of our database is that we have 56,000 season ticket holders. 40% of our ticket holders reside outside the 7-county metro, and 22% of our ticket holders come from out of Minnesota. And they come in and spend time and money in our state. We believe our ownership has the right approach, trying to invest in Minnesota, invest in a winning team, invest in our community. We have an opportunity here to secure the team for the next generation of fans, and also to secure a competitive multi-use venue. Last point is the opportunity this year. Why now? Construction costs are down 9%. Interest rates are at a 20-year low. There's an opportunity to create jobs and economic stimulus. The clock is ticking on the lease. And we also believe that the public wants and expects to keep the Vikings in Minnesota. And we also have the results of the Twins ballpark, a long, difficult conversation, but it showed what's possible when we opened that facility. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Bagley, to your jobs issue, can you tell me how many lobbyists have been hired by the Vikings to lobby the stadium?
Mr. Chair, we have I think three lobbying firms and then a couple of affiliates that are with.
My question is, how many lobbyists, as in individuals? I've been approached by two within the last 24 hours, and you were in my office yesterday. So how many lobbyists? And at what cost, Mr. Bagley?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I believe, again, the three firms, one has two, one has another has two, and another has four, and then we have a couple of other specialist. So
you are a full employment lobbyist operation. Mr. Bagley, I have another question for you. Last night when I was watching the hearing, it was apparent that when the bill was changed, the focus was on Minneapolis. Can you tell me, has Minneapolis as a city or the county that Minneapolis resides in agreed to have the stadium and the taxes?
Mr. Chair, and I can and leave some of that response.
I am going to call them up, but I would like the question answered by you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. We have had conversations with Minneapolis. I believe they're talking with others.
My question is, have they agreed to have the stadium and the accompanying taxes?
Yeah, I would, Mr. Chair. Defer to the city to
all right, and we're calling them up next. Representative Murrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I want to respect the guidelines you gave us about staying within the purview of the committee. So I have a question for Representative Solberg. Representative Solberg, as I look at, excuse me, I think it's probably from sections 9 on of the bill. Do I understand correctly that what your bill does is allow a host city, I think you focus on Minneapolis in your bill, to essentially enter into negotiations with the Vikings concerning a stadium. I look at the membership of this commission. I see the chair of the commission. Does your bill envision a process in which the state is authorizing a host city to start negotiations with the Vikings concerning a stadium, and then the bill gives certain levers that would be available to help finance this stadium?
Mr. Baig, or Mr. Representative Solberg, either one.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, thank you. I think you hit the nail on the head, and I think that was part of my opening statements as well. And I'm trying my best to focus on the purview of the committee as the chair wants. There is language in the bill that was added last night that allows some flexibility in that. If another city would like to step up to the plate as well, but without any question, I think Minneapolis is probably the leading candidate for that, but they're not precluded from being the only one that could have the opportunity to negotiate.
Representative Kalin is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to answer a question that was asked last night by Representative Lanning to the provision that was added as Section 1, the high school league assistance. The 5% of the total amount deposited by the Vikings in an escrow fund for the 10-year debt, first 10 years of debt service, the debt service cost is $420 million. The upfront net present value is $340 million. And 5% of that 340 will be $17 million that would be deposited in the high school league account for the need-based financial assistance. And I got a call at 7:30 this morning telling me that number. So I really appreciate the timeliness and response of Mr. Begley to that concern. But I think a question for Representative Solberg. One of the statements that Mr. Begley made that I've expressed concern about since we had a hearing in Representative Nelson's committee last year is that the statement was that the Metrodome no longer works for modern sports economics. And my concern has always been that the NFL, by its structure, is driven by an ownership group, by the group of owners. And there are 31 owners around the country that are setting the terms of our debate here. It is our job as legislators to set the terms of our debate. I think I'm going to continue to move the bill forward so that we can sharpen, focus, hone, give an opportunity for the Vikings and for the Sports Facilities Commission, to make things work. But I think my question for Representative Solberg here is, if we're providing sort of the mother of all subsidies here, why we have exempted on the bottom of page 4 in section 13 from the Business Subsidy Act, the 116J.994 requirements that include things like meeting wage and job goals, signing a subsidy agreement, a clawback for failure to meet those goals, reports by the recipients, reports by the grantors, et cetera, et cetera. I'm wondering if you might share your thoughts on that exemption and whether you're open to making sure that the Vikings sign a business subsidy agreement as required for every other tax expenditure in the state of this kind.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, to answer the last part of your question, yes, I would be. This is probably some language that is also been in other the Twin Stadium and other type of things. I think as we move forward, we're trying to give opportunities, and if there's concerns expressed by the legislature, I think that's a very legitimate concern to be expressed.
So, Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to make amendments on the fly, but I will be offering to Representative Solberg at some point, and probably working with Representative Rickovina or other chairs, to provide some language that will require that we have the transparency and accountability that Minnesotans have grown to expect when we do projects like this.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Begley, last night at, I guess, about 11:30, we had an opportunity to have a back and forth on the issue of urgency. And the big part of your presentation talks about the opportunity that this bill presents to secure the franchise for Minnesota for a long time to come. Representative Hornstein and I asked you a series of direct questions about that issue, and we got not exactly direct answers, but I would summarize the testimony basically to be that the Wolves do not intend to move the team, that they may sell the team to another owner who may wish to move the team, but that there is no place in America to move the team to, that Minnesota is the 14th largest franchise market, and there are 18 teams out there in worse markets, and that the Metrodome, while you may not enter a new lease, you can continue to play there without entering a new lease, and there was no contradiction to any of that testimony. Since I had the opportunity to serve on division, and this is now coming before the committee, I just thought I would share the fact that I think that Minnesota Vikings fans and Minnesota taxpayers deserve to know whether they need to pass this bill this year to save the Vikings from leaving, or whether we have time and have time to deal with more pressing priorities first and can deal with a stadium issue sometime in the future.
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, thank you again for the question. To be clear, I think you, I don't know if you tried to summarize my comments, but that wasn't exactly what I said last night. And a couple of points of clarification. One, that you said that there's no place in America for the Vikings to move. I did not say that last night, so I just want to clarify that that's not my statement. And secondly, that you said that we're 14th largest market, which we agreed to, that's roughly where we are, 14th largest market. And you said that there are 18 worst markets. Those are not my words. I think there are 32 NFL teams, and two of them share a facility. So 31 NFL facilities. Since 1992, 28 of those NFL teams have resolved their stadium issues. There's only two or three that haven't. So while there are 18 smaller markets than the Twin Cities, that most of those have resolved their issue and regarding stadium, and we are at the bottom of the NFL in revenues, and that I think that was the point I was trying to make about where we fit amongst those 32.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, that is what you said last night, Mr. Bagley, but I think the question still comes before us, which is, do we need to pass this bill this year in order to keep the Vikings in Minnesota or not?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, again, I think that, you know, we hope so. It's up to you to move the process forward. But I just, again, make the case for why now, and that is the construction costs are down 9%. Interest rates are at a 20-year low. We have an opportunity to create 7,500 construction jobs, preserve jobs that are currently exist at the Metrodome, and some ongoing jobs going forward. The expectation that we do retain the Vikings is there, and then again the ballpark shows us after long debate and difficult debate and appropriate debate, we resolve the issue and the facility open to great acclaim. So again, the urgency is there. 20 games left at the Metrodome. Which is either this session or next session. We believe there's urgency, and again, we appreciate your time. We know you have a lot of other issues, a lot of priorities, but we believe it's urgent that this issue get addressed.
Representative Solberg.
May I respond a little bit to my feelings on that, Representative Winkler? First of all, I hope to be a problem solver, and that's one of the reasons I'm involved in this to begin with. Secondly, there are some opportunities now, but I don't like to try to solve problems when everything's under the gun. This legislation that's before us right now will give other entities, other local units of government, an opportunity to negotiate. Not negotiate with a timeline in front of them, but with some opportunities to look at this, to see if it works, to be able to do that negotiations. I think that's important, because if you do things, with a threat over your head or under the gun, you may not be making the right kind of decisions. This gives the city and any other entity an opportunity to be able to move forward with negotiations. That may take a while, and if it doesn't work out, you'll be back here. But it is an opportunity, I think, for them to be able to move this forward. And
Representative
that's how
Solberg,
I view this.
They could negotiate without a bill, too. We don't need to tell them to negotiate. Representative Winkler, are you going to shoot? Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I just want to just be very clear that we can have a discussion of whether this is a good opportunity right now or not. And that's what I take Mr. Bagley's testimony to be, that this is an opportunity and they feel a sense of urgency. But what I want to be clear is that the Vikings aren't willing to tell us that we need to pass a bill this year in order to save the team.
Representative Winkler, do you want an answer? I think you've gotten one. Representative, are you finished? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And first of all, Mr. Bagley, I think I need to correct your testimony. You say 20 games left at the Metrodome. There could be 24. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt. Yes, sir, absolutely. 20 games are 8 regular season, 2 preseason games, and hopefully 2 home playoff games.
But thank you.
Representative Marquardt.
I guess I do want to get to the heart of the matter here, and I want to see something work. And yet I know when the, and I know I'm talking financing, but I think it does have something to do with moving this bill forward and so forth. But when the financing package was laid out the other day, the governor's office was very cool to it. And
that's an understatement.
Yes.
Representative Solberg.
And right, my Chair. Question is, are you looking, I mean, are there some other options you're looking at for financing? I know there's a couple different packages, but both of them certainly don't have unanimous support. And so the concern is, you know, as we move forward, are you looking at potentially some other options of financing, Representative Solberg, for this?
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, a lot of ideas have been expressed, and we've had an analysis of those as well. If there are other ideas, every idea should have a good airing on financing of it. Yesterday or the day before, we had some conversations with some public officials in Minneapolis. They have, in the bill, we have put in some language that would allow them to do some things about development around the Metrodome and so forth. So yes, a short question, as it goes forward, those would be also on the table as ideas come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bagley, I have a real concern about lines 18 through 20 on page 11. It looks as if this is a language that I think is taken from the Convention Center enabling legislation. And it basically seems to say to me that Minneapolis would be paying capital and operating costs of a stadium. And, you know, my concern about that is that, you know, we've had other cities, most recently Dallas and New England, and several years back Washington Redskins paid primarily with private sources for their stadium. Now, in Washington, they had 28% public financing. New England, through Robert Kraft, the owner, did it 100% except for some infrastructure improvements around Gillette Stadium. Dallas was, you know, about two-thirds private funding. And so we're at about one-third in this bill. I think that needs to go significantly higher. And you know, I read a quote last night from, you know, Mr. Wilf, where he talked about that he wouldn't move the team. But he also said that in 05 that he wants an open-air stadium and might not necessarily need state funding to build it. So are the Vikings going to come up significantly higher than one-third private financing? You know, there's also other options, not just the Vikings. In New England, the business community put in money for $40 million a year for sponsorships and premium seat sales. Is that under consideration? I'm talking about cumulative private sources. Or is there any effort or any sense that you could get up to about 70% like some of these other cities have done?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, several questions in there, but that I think I said up front, our view of a team contribution should be, we believe, based on an open-air NFL facility, and we believe it should be one-third private, and there's some rationale for that. You did state larger markets, New England, Dallas, major markets, as Mr. Representative Winkler in our discussion about where we rank in terms of market. We're essentially a small to medium-sized market, middle of the pack. If you look at other cities that we compete with as a region, Twin Cities competes with Indianapolis. Lucas Oil Field was built. That was a 90%, 10%, 90 public, 10% private. Arizona, roughly the same size, about one-third private, two-thirds public. So if you average out, it's approximately a third. Also, I believe, if you look at the Twins precedent, the legislation that passed, this legislature had the Twins in for $130 million, which is passed in the bill, 30% of the project. I know the Twins put in more since then. So that's some of the answers to some of your questions.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Silver.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I don't necessarily agree with the Viking stance on it, because I think the contribution from them and or other business leaders within that are benefited by it could be a greater. And that's part of, I think, is negotiations as well. Let me answer directly your question on those particular lines. This is laws left over from the 1986 law, which is the use of the convention center bonds. And this is giving the city of Minneapolis more flexibility to be able to use some of that money.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, just...
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, but I just really have a problem with, as it stands now, it looks as if we're relying on Minneapolis to pay two-thirds of the cost, and I think that's very problematic.
Members, I have three more individuals that want to ask questions. Then I'm going to call Minneapolis up. Then we're going to deal with the amendments, and then, hopefully, we will vote. So, Representative Simon.
Mr. Bagley, are the Vikings losing money annually, or is it just a question of not making as much as is comparable with other teams?
Mr. Bagley.
If I could, Mr. Chair, and Representative Simon, ask Steve Poppin, our CFO, to assist that question. Sure. At one point, while Mr. Poppin's coming up.
We can bring up another chair.
Is that there is a program because of our lack of stadium revenue that's called SRS, Supplemental Revenue Sharing, that we receive. It's been reported in the newspaper between $15 and $20 million annually as a subsidy from other NFL teams, other NFL cities, including many that are smaller markets, and so that subsidizes our operation. I wanted to point that question or that piece out, Mr. Poppin, answer the rest of.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Poppin. I'm the Vice President of Finance and Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Vikings.
Mr. Poppin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe the question was, are the Vikings losing money? The answer is yes, we are. On a tax basis as well as a net income basis, we are losing money. We will this year. We did last year as well.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Simon, we're negotiating back here, too.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Simon, we're negotiating back here, too.
Thank you.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Poppin, the question then, could you tell us what was the value of the franchise at the time of the last sale? How much did the Wolves pay for it, essentially? And then do you have any estimation of what the value of the franchise would be today?
Mr. Poppin.
In 2005, when the Wilfs purchased the club in an arm's-length transaction from Mr. McCombs, it was purchased for $600 million. We have not done a valuation of the club, so I can't definitively tell you what it is. There are reports out there in Forbes and others, and no one's exactly sure how they come up with their valuations on those. However, it has been in the $800 million range.
Representative Simon?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think this is a good point and one that I remember being taught. I'm the son of a sports agent, so I remember hearing this at the dinner table, that very often we hear for Major League Sports teams. And by the way, I voted for the Twin Stadium. I don't shy away from it. It was the right move. I'd do it again. I voted for the Gopher Stadium, but maybe I was brainwashed at the dinner table. But we hear very often about losses from sports teams, and they tend, especially when negotiating with my dad, to say there's no money. But the reality is the values of these franchises, the underlying value, keeps going up and up and up and up. So the value of the thing, if it were to be sold today, would be a lot higher. That's a pretty good turnaround, $200 million from $600 to $800 million in just a few years. And there's no shortage of wealthy people who want to be sports teams owners. And they're not suckers, and they know a good bit when they see it. So I'm not anti-stadium per se. Under the right circumstances, we'll see. I voted for the Twins. I voted for the Vikings. But I think that's a statistic, or that's a development to bear in mind.
Representative Gutwall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief here. I want to focus on the bill, but I wanted to comment briefly. Somebody said it, you know, you don't want to put us under the gun. I think Representative Solberg mentioned that, but it certainly feels that way. I mean, this is the second hearing. I was at the hearing last night. This is the second hearing in 10 hours. And the proposal is changing rapidly right before our eyes. So it's a little difficult. I'm one who would like to find a solution, too. I think that's where my constituents are at. But there are concerns, and I'll go to the bill. The 40-year term of the lease seems rather puzzling, and maybe what I'll do is ask a few questions and just ask them to respond. The 40-year term of the lease, and then Representative Hornstein got close, but I'm looking at line 11.23 to 11.24 on page 11, where we're using proceeds from this to pay for a Target Center. And I understand that there's a significant debt outstanding on that, but as we look at a 40-year term to try to drive enough revenue to pay for this thing, it looks like we're also trying to pay for, you know, some other things. And maybe that's the alchemy that's necessary to make this happen. I don't know, but the question certainly begs to be asked.
Mr. Chairman, let me be very clear on that, my understanding of that, and it's in there for a couple of reasons. You have to go back to the law of 1986. So this is the Convention Center law of 1986. And in that law, there's specific things that the money that is collected from the entertainment district can be used for. And this gives just the city of Minneapolis more flexibility if there are additional funds that are generated from that particular tax, from that entertainment tax district.
Representative Gutwalt.
Well, Mr. Chair, assuming we put a new tax in place, or if that's what happens here, or we extend an existing tax, and this is where I go to the 40-year term, wouldn't you want to focus those revenues on retiring the bonds as soon as possible rather than on allowing it to be spent on many other things?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that you hit the nail on the head, because that's the flexibility of negotiations within it. But if they choose not to do that, this would allow them to be used for some additional opportunities as well. But that's a decision that you or I or the legislature should not make, but whoever is negotiating that package.
Representative Anderson, I have two more, and then we're going to bring up Minneapolis. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Mr. Bagley, does the NFL, National Football League, have any provision or policy to assist with the financing of a project such as this?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the NFL used to have a program called the G3 program. I've testified in the past, in 2006, to that program. That was providing finance support to the team. It's essentially a loan to the team that would need to be repaid by the owner. The owner would be responsible for ultimately. The G3 program has expired. There's no longer any funds in that program. We would appeal to the NFL at the appropriate time for league financing assistance, but that's focused on the private side and trying to help. It's $200+ million, a significant contribution from owners, and help on that side to kind of help finance the owner contribution.
Representative Biskins.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if I understand the path of the bill would have to go from here to rules.
The motion has been to send the bill to rules.
Do you know, Mr. Chairman, if then the preceding motion would be to go to taxes?
It will go to taxes and to finance. It's got a number of stops. But it's going to have to go to rules because we are weeks past any conceivable deadline, which we did not enforce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I strongly agree with you. And yet, we have scant little time to balance the budget rather than talk about this bill. My hope is that we park this bill here until the legislature and the governor have signed into law a balanced budget. And at that point, I'll even make the motion to reconsider. But at this time, Mr. Chairman, I hope that we can vote this legislation down in this committee. So when it comes to the appropriate time, I will request, I do now request a roll call.
Representative Biskins requests a roll call. There will be a roll call. Representative Murrow, and this is the last questioner, and then we're going to go to Minneapolis. Representative Murrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, is there any state general fund money in this bill?
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Solberg, does this bill simply allow a host city to negotiate with the Vikings?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes.
Representative Solberg.
And then my final question, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, I understand there are certain levers being authorized here for part of that negotiation. Are you open as this, if this bill continues, to talking about other ways to create or allow the host city and the Vikings to negotiate?
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, yes. And as of yesterday, with some conversations from elected officials in the city of Minneapolis, we have included that in part of that in the bill.
Representative Solberg, does this create streams of revenue that can be used to backfill cuts in local government aid or health and human services, which would be impacted by either the county or the city that would accept this?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that answer is no.
No. What, then where are your streams of revenue coming from, Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chairman, there's a special entertainment tax within the city of Minneapolis, within that entertainment district. They pay, it's a tax on food, liquor, and I believe some motel rooms as well.
So, Representative Solberg, you're saying that those taxes, as they exist now, are designated, but the taxes you increase are designated to a stadium. Could they be designated for anything else?
Well, Mr.
Such
Chair,
as local government aid cuts or cuts to health and human services?
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be difficult to direct those to state local government needs. I suppose the legislature can do anything they want. I mean, one of the proposals that the governor put forward yesterday was to take property tax from there and range and put it in the general fund.
Well, Representative Solberg, you've made my point. I would, at this point, like Minneapolis, a representative from Minneapolis, to come down and testify.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Mr. Begley and Mr. Poppin, thank you too, and stay close. I know you have another hearing across the way, but we're coming to a conclusion here, I hope. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The Senate is holding a hearing at the same time.
Representative Solberg, we understand that. Yeah. And again, we're past deadline, and we're in the final weeks of session, and we were here till after 11 o'clock last night. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Elizabeth Glidden. I'm a council member from the city of Minneapolis. I'm also chair of our Intergovernmental Relations Committee.
Ms. Lydon, I watched you last night, and you were cut off because Representative Nelson was doing what he had to do. He was under a tight guideline with midnight. So today I hope we can get your full testimony in. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. And I have two primary points, and I'm going to confine my remarks to what is in this specific proposal and Minneapolis's position on this specific proposal. And as I said last night, I do want to make clear to this committee and to all watching that Minneapolis believes the Vikings are a very important Minnesota asset of value to the state as a whole, and we understand that there's work going on to try to find a solution here. But however, we have some issues with the particular proposal put forward. I want to start with some information about the convention center because that's kind of where I left off last night. We are very protective of our convention center in the city of Minneapolis because we know that this is of great value to the state as a whole and to the entire region. We're protective of the funding mechanisms that allow us to run the convention center, to pay the debt, and to prepare for the needs of this convention center for the future. Here are some of the numbers relating to the Minneapolis Convention Center. It generates over $260 million annually for the region and for the state. And in 2008, that number was $267 million. The Convention Center attracts more than 800,000 visitors annually, with about 200,000 of those coming from outside of the metro area. And a lot of this revenue, income and sales tax produced, goes back to support the state. As well, there are thousands of jobs that are dependent on the convention center. These are jobs in the hospitality industry, in the restaurants, these are very good living wage jobs. And we know that our business community does not want something done that's going to harm this resource or reduce its ability to produce economic benefit for the region and for the state. We've had some analysis done of the economic benefit from the convention center and understand that this is about four times what may be produced by a Viking stadium. And I know that the committee last night, and I think there's a report here that's available on what's the economic impact of Vikings, and that was an analysis done by the University of Minnesota. So one thing I want to address on this funding source is what are the needs after the bonds are paid off on the convention center? This is, and I want to be clear too, this is because there's been a lot of talk about what could the money be used for, and there's no new money that's being talked about here. This is the existing source that is used now for the convention center that we're talking about now being used for all sorts of different purposes. But it's needed at the convention center. When the bonds are paid off, and this number that's $28 million, that includes both the bonds on the convention center and the bonds on the associated parking facility that is right next to the convention center. This facility will be 30 years old. Last night, it was Representative Beard, I think, who asked a question about the 40-year proposal on the financing and made a comment about how facilities, when they reach that 30-year mark, is kind of a marker because there are new needs that come for these facilities, new substantial needs for capital improvements to make sure that they continue to be economically viable. At this point, while we have a capital program that is in place right now, we know that there will be substantial capital needs that will come into play when the bonds are retiring and when this facility is 30 years old. We are concerned that nothing should happen to reduce the ability of the convention center to produce economic benefit to the state and to the region. And for that reason, we are very concerned about use of this funding source.
Ms. Glidden, I have a Representative Gutwell, do you want to ask a question to this point?
No.
All right. Ms. Glidden, continue.
All right. And just a couple more things on the convention center. I want to make sure that members understand what are the different things that we pay for. There is an operating subsidy that we pay for that's over $15 million per year. There's the debt service that we've already talked about. There's ongoing capital needs right now we pay for this facility that are in the range of $6 to $8 million. There's almost $8 million per year that we pay for sales and marketing of the facility and of the region. And this goes to, because these facilities, they are constantly changing in how they're able to attract, what kinds of markets they attract to, and how we continue to produce that economic benefit for the region. Just as one more example, right now we are evaluating the cost of replacing the existing domes on the convention center. So this is a recent estimate here, put that cost at $15 million. So you can see this is a lot that goes into supporting this facility.
Okay. Representative Gutwell, to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Glidden, going back to the issue of the Target Center.
Yep.
Dollars. You know, you just mentioned replacing domes on the Minneapolis Convention Center, $15 million, concerns about the revenue stream. How does the Target Center factor into this as part of the proposal? How does Minneapolis view that?
Ms. Glidden.
Well, you know, right now, so there are several taxes that support the Convention Center Some are citywide, and some are downtown specific. One of the taxes, and is the only tax that can go to into the city's general fund, is this entertainment tax. Right now, we pay, I think it's about $11 million a year to support retiring of the debt on the Target Center and the ongoing capital needs of the Target Center. Going forward, we have $60 million in debt to retire on the Target Center, and we have a capital program just to keep the facility at an at-is kind of state that is in the range of $60 million. So that gives you an idea, although this entertainment tax can go into the city's general fund, essentially we take that plus put more money into the Target Center. So again, the concern is, I mean, we are already doing the things we need to do to support multiple facilities that support our region and our state, and we're very concerned. Again, this is not new money that is being generated. It's just talking about how the existing money would be used, and we know that this convention center needs to be fully supported to produce the economic benefit that it does today.
Representative Galt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Glidden, I think what I'm trying to figure out is, does this deal as it's proposed right now help you in meeting the financial needs you've identified other than the stadium, or does it suck kind of the wind out of the sails?
Ms. Glidden.
It does not assist us. It cuts off our ability to fully support the convention center, and that is our great concern.
Representative Lanning to Ms. Glidden.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Councilmember Glidden. Line 1111 in this proposed draft says revenues received from the tax may only be used, and then it opens up the possibility of the city of Minneapolis choosing on its own whether or not to help fund a new stadium in the downtown Minneapolis area. This is not a mandate. It opens the door of the possibility. My question is the city of Minneapolis interested and willing in trying to negotiate a solution or not? Are you telling us that the city of Minneapolis is not interested in trying to negotiate, where you have the option at the end to decide how you're going to do this, if you're going to do it?
Ms. Glidden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. What I can tell you is that our council president, Barb Johnson, and our mayor have both been engaged in ongoing conversations with representatives of the team, with Representative Solberg, and others, and with members of the business community. So they have been engaged in those conversations.
Well, Representative Lanning.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've said all along that this stadium deal is not going to happen unless there's a local partner. And the city of Minneapolis or some local government or combination of local governments is going to have to step up to the plate and say, we are willing to work out a deal with the Viking organization to make this happen. What we're talking about is putting in place a bill, legislation, that would enable local governments to make that decision, would enable the city of Minneapolis to decide whether or not to do this, or any other metropolitan city. I fully understand and appreciate your concern for protecting the long-term future of the convention center. That's being a responsible local official. And I was one for many years, so I appreciate that. But we're not ordering you or telling you that the city of Minneapolis needs to do this. We're saying with this bill, this is an option for you should you choose.
Ms. Glidden?
I guess with that, and I take those comments, Representative, but I would like to go to, I think, unless there's more questions on the convention center, the second point I wanted to make on behalf of the city of Minneapolis. Which is that, as I said earlier, we view the Vikings as a statewide asset. And when we had more detailed testimony yesterday evening about the fan base and the ticket holders for the Vikings game, it's very clear that this is a statewide asset. You go into any restaurant and bar on a game day, and you see that there is economic benefit that goes all around this state due to the Vikings. So this is a statewide asset. And right now, the solution that is being proposed, and I understand your point, Representative, that there's not a mandate in this, but the solution that is being proposed is Minneapolis-specific. I think the conversation that we have been having right now, frankly, is exhibit number one why we need a regional economic strategy for how we support these kinds of facilities and these kinds of assets to our state as a whole, to our region as a whole. It should not be one city that bears the entire burden, and yes, there are benefits too, but it right now bears the entire burden of paying with our taxpayers from the city of Minneapolis for the facility. So I'm not sure that we need this bill for discussions to continue. And as I said, I know that our mayor and our council president have both been engaged in those discussions, as have others from other cities and counties in this region.
Representative Lanning? No. Ms. Lydon, Ms. Lydon, to your point, negotiations have been going on, will continue to go on, and you don't need a bill to be told to continue to negotiate. I think you've made it clear that you know the importance of the Vikings and the team. And we are, and I've said this before, weeks past any deadline. Further questions to Ms. Glidden? Then I have amendments. The first amendment, and you might want to stay close, is Representative Poppy, A-10. Representative Poppy, to your amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-10, and that there was one in the packet. The A-10 is been the revised version based on last night's bill changes. This is, and there was some work last night talking about the Minnesota State High School League. The State High School League is somebody who does use the Metrodome, and they use it for soccer and football tournaments. They'd like to be able to continue to do that in a future publicly owned facility. And what this does is allow them to be able to do that without the costs that they currently incur to the Metrodome. So I think it's a very purposeful amendment, and I think that it helps our state high school league, it helps our high schools, it helps our student athletes, and I would appreciate your support.
Representative Solberg, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, I kind of like this. This is something very similar that has taken place, if I recall right, at the Excel Center. I want to get some additional information if that's a free thing at the Excel Center or not. I think it is.
No, actually.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, no, I understand that I believe the Minnesota State High School League currently pays upwards of $400,000 to be at the Excel for the hockey tournaments. And so it's quite a high price. And they're looking to be able to lower those costs as they go into the football and soccer tournaments.
Representative Solberg, to the amendment then?
I appreciate the amendment.
And I'd like to move the amendment, the A-10 amendment then.
The amendment's been moved. The motion's before us. Representative Kahn, to the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I don't have an amendment to the amendment, but I'd like it to be looked at some future time. I noticed for the foundation grants we have a requirement for equitably awarded based on considerations of gender balance, and there's nothing in here which puts that same condition on the high school league. So I'd like to, I don't have an amendment at this point, but I'd like
Representative Kahn, if this bill continues, you can offer it. If it stays here, you can offer it. If we bring the bill back up at any future
date. I'm sure that the author of the amendment following this issue can work on it.
I believe the there are only three women on the committee, and
yes.
I think you've made your point. Representative Solberg, further discussion. Representative Sterner.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. To the amendment, I'm just wondering, is it designed mostly for soccer, which internationally we call football or foosball, and football, that just because of Viking Stadium, or would you be looking at the high school league, who has lots of other different things, including marching band and other events as well that they use the Metrodome currently for?
Representative Poppy.
Thank you for that question, Representative Sterner. This is right now looking at just the soccer and football tournaments, and that's where the cost is. We may be, if they are renting the Metrodome for other facility or for other uses, then perhaps that would be, again, another amendment. But right now, the 7 days that they're looking at are for soccer and football tournaments.
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A-10 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The next amendment is A-13. Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this replaces a fake form of funding in the bill with a real form of funding. Representative Solberg, you misspoke a little bit when you said there was no state general fund money in the bill, because the in your Section 3 of the bill, where you do a Minnesota lottery game and the proceeds from the Minnesota lottery do go, proportion goes into the general fund. Now, the reason why Section 3 is a fake funding is that, if I were being nasty, I would suggest that you should return your degree to Harvard.
Oh,
but I'm not going to suggest that.
Representative Solberg, we can leave that for the Education Committee.
But the basic issue is, if you start a new lottery game, what it mainly does is it takes funding away from the existing lottery games. And I think there's been a lot of evidence throughout the, not only here, but throughout the country, that that's what it does. It's new sports. It may attract very few new players, but it's really disposable income that people put into that. So the proposal in my amendment, I do need to leave, at the end of my amendment, I deleted Section 3, but I need to leave lines 215 and 216 in. So the amendment.
Representative Council, what?
So I move my amendment, but instead of deleting Section 3, I put lines 215 and 216 at the end of the amendment.
Representative Kahn, I want Mr. Shepard to explain what you're doing, because I don't understand it. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, is your intent that your new amendment would deposit the portion of net proceeds in the facility until the bonds sold by the Metropolitan Council for acquisition and betterment of a football stadium have been defeased or retired?
Yes.
So
I think it fits in right after the words stadium account occurs in both. So,
Mr. Chair and members,
Mr. Shepard,
be on page 1, line 24 of Representative Kahn's A-13 amendment to insert the phrase, until the bonds sold by the Metropolitan Council for acquisition and betterment of a football stadium have been defeased or retired.
Representative Kahn.
That's okay. I thought we'd keep the same. We defined the stadium account in there, and I thought we'd keep that too, but I guess it doesn't.
Representative Kahn, I'd prefer if Mr. Shepard does it, but if that's agreeable to you, we'll incorporate that into your amendment.
Yes.
And everyone understands?
And I will just point out that this will raise totally new money, because this will raise $10 million. The estimate from the fiscal note that we've had is $10 million a year, plus $16 million into the environmental trust fund, and this is only for people passing through the airport, of which 85% of them, the estimates also are from out of state. So this is truly new money.
All right. So that's the Kahn motion. Representative Solberg, to Kahn amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I've been a co-author of this bill in the past, but in this particular one, it brings a whole set of issues that I probably don't want to deal with as well, so I let the committee make the decision.
All right, further discussion. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the Kahn amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The amendment? Any opposed? We incorporated the language in, so the amendment. Representative Gutwald, do you have a question? All right, Representative Gutwald.
Mr. Chair, just real quickly, on the final paragraph, D, line 1.21 to 1.24, it starts out with the portion of the net proceeds, and then it mentions the remainder, but it doesn't identify what the portion and the remainder are. Can you help me understand that?
Yes, that's the same as any lottery proceeds are. It's 60% goes into, and it would be the same as the stadium or football theme game, too. It would be 60% goes to the Environmental Trust Fund and 40% goes to the General Fund, and that's a constitutional requirement. So we can't play around. We can't play around with that. And that would be the same. It's not. And that would be the same.
Does that clarify it?
In Section 3.
All right. I'm going to go back to the Kahn amendment as amended, but we incorporated the language that Mr. Shepherd explained. All those in favor of the amendment, again, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The amendment is defeated. We now have the bill as amended before us. I realize there were a number of individuals who wished to testify. However, I have tried to explain that given when these bills are heard at this late juncture, and we are indeed, as Representative Biskin said, trying to balance the budget, it is almost impossible for us to have the same type of a hearing that I would prefer we would have on a topic like this. The motion that Representative Nelson has made is that House File 3825 is amended, would be passed, and be re-referred to rules. Representative Biskins has asked for a roll call, and the clerk will take the roll.
Anderson?
Yes.
Biskins?
No.
Emmer?
No.
Gottwald?
Yes.
Hilty?
Yes.
Hornstein?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Kalin?
Aye.
Kiffmeyer?
No.
Lanning?
Yes.
Marquardt?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Sanders?
No.
Simon?
No.
Stirner?
Yes.
Winkler?
No.
Chair votes no. There being 10 nays and 9 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The bill is defeated. We will keep it in the possession of this committee. I see.
Chairman, thank you very much.
Representative Solberg, I assume we'll be working over the interim.
More than that.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
There was one other amendment that was passed out in our packet on the special Vikings plates, A12. Is that also?
Representative Murrow asked to have that.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. I decided not to offer that amendment, Representative Kiffmeyer.
So will it be retained by the committee also?
Well, yeah. He can offer it should the bill come back up. He certainly can bring it forward. I mean, that anything we can. They're coming in. Representative Poppy, quickly.
Yes, I'd like to move the minutes of April 27th.
Representative Poppy moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. The meeting is adjourned.